they still have to come before here because we're the appropriating.
Exactly. So do you want, like,
let's talk about it after. Let's reconvene. We'll talk about it later. Let's reconvene. Ways and Means. Are we on tape?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I see that March and Evan are here. Comptroller Lack Gallagher. Would you like to come in and talk about your budget?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I apologize if I made you wait. I understood.
That's all right. We were a little ahead. So
okay, great.
You were fine. Yeah.
So they'll have his name on them?
Yes.
Okay.
They're approved by you, Dave.
Oh, that's a kiss of death, isn't it?
I hope not. Don't tell me that. You should have called me and told me that. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the three budget amendments that Legislator Donaldson is putting forward on our behalf. They fall into several different categories, and I think I want to speak to the one first that is with regard to budgeted hours for the auditors. And I hope that Tracy comes back in a moment because she had a question yesterday about the timeline on that. So I want to share with you guys a timeline.
Tracy in the hallway? Right there. Oh, there she is. Thank you.
The point that I want to make with this is that Tracy asked yesterday in the Laws and Rules Committee what the time frame was on the hours, and you can see it here. I think the important thing to realize is that we're talking about the Comptroller's Office moving forward. You know, I want to be somebody who's transparent and gives you the information that you're asking for. This is the best I could ascertain in the time I had. But this team is going to be worked at the 80 hours. I mean, I really need them to step up, and I'm going to be expecting more work from them. So that is one of the amendments to support the four auditor positions at 80 hours. A second amendment is to enable a confidential secretary for this position, which is the only countywide elected office that doesn't have one, and I just call to your attention that a number of department heads also have confidential secretaries. I don't see this as a political position. I see this as a financial communications position. Lastly, I would just say the third and really important and vital amendment is to increase the salary of the Director of Internal Audit and Control. We've had a hard time with turnover in that position, and that position supervises four audit positions. So, you know, I believe that that position should have a CPA, and my deputy, Evan, knows this as well. I think, actually, the deputy position probably should have a CPA, and I'm going to be working with Evan over the next year for that kind of transition. So this is really not about having one CPA. I think we need a team of financial people there. So these are the three things together. It's about $61,485. I would say if we're eating into fund balance by, you know, double digits in the millions, we can set aside money for Watchdog. Okay? So that's my position. I really seek your support in this. It's really vital, I think, to get the work done that we want to get done and to support you in your you know, in fulfilling your duties. I'm happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Is it okay, Linda?
Yes, please.
So, only because sometimes these things are so confusing to read. So, you're asking for one brand new person and the other two were changing in the hours?
No.
I'm not asking for any new positions.
Okay.
There's no change to headcount.
Okay.
But the position of administrative assistant would be transitioned to a confidential secretary position. The four auditors would be brought permanently to 80 hours. I want you to know they're working at 80 hours right now, but it requires the Comptroller's Office and them to basically get new approval every 90 days. That is added administrative burden that is taking away from our ability to really conduct work. So that's the change, the hours change there. And then the internal Director of Internal Audit and Control really is just pure salary. Let me say something about that. It is not easy to find CPAs, and in this case, the position is overseeing people that make more than that position pays. So it's really just about basic fairness and really encouraging good talent to come to that role.
So I've
been on record as being supportive of the force of confidential secretary and something you just spoke to, and that is having as many sort of CPAs in the office as possible. So I love the idea both of funding the director of IAC at that level so that you could get the qualified person. My one struggle, and I've been trying to get the sort of an understanding, because this hours thing has gone back and forth over the years. This is helpful, thank you. And also, just I asked it to, and I'll share it with you later, and we can talk about it more after. But I asked to get a sense of where in the county people were working at the 40-hour rate versus the 37.5 versus the 35.
I'd like to see that too.
So when I run down the list, the 40 hours are really limited to emergency communication, sheriff, probation, jail, and UCAT. And highway, that's it. That's the total I see. Clerk of the legislature is at 37.5, and so is the comptroller. Clerk of the legislature in part is at 37.5 because of all the night hours that we have because of the support staff for the meetings. So I think I'm going to want to talk to you a little bit more about why in this kind in finances, at 35, you know, we have most of our desk jobs in the county are at 35. And there was a time when the office of the comptroller was at lower hours and then bumped up to 37.5 and then working then as an alternative work schedule at 40. So that for me of the three is the one that I struggle the most with. I feel really supportive of the other two just outright, just being totally clear.
Thank you.
Well, just for clarification, 2013 through 14, 15, and if you go back, and they were 80 up until that change was made in 2017.
Yeah, no, I saw that list as well. They were moving.
It wasn't going back and forth. It was steady until 2017.
If I could speak to that for a second.
Some of the politics of that is unfortunately, and I mean, I think that's where some of that comes in. Having said that, I don't really want to get into that.
Yeah.
I commend you on your election, and I look forward to working with you, and I really think that you're going to bring a significant professionalism to the office. The thing that I thought of when I was part of the team that tried to push that a controller in our government, because I feel that, in fact, at this point, I think eventually I'm hoping to see some of the decisions coming out of the Commissioner's Office for Oversight and going into your area. Because my mindset is I want an independent person that is not beholden to either the legislature or the executive putting their sense of eyes on. And I think that would be a really great thing for this county. And that was what I envisioned from the very beginning when we put the charter together. That was part of that idea. It didn't end up being like that, but I think it will be like that with you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your support. If I could just speak to the change over time, I think I am dealing with a huge morale problem. I'm going to be abundantly clear. People feel like they've been kicked in the face because of the tension between the executive and the controller. And I can tell you right now, I'm going to work these people hard. So it's not really a question of whether or not they're going to fulfill those hours, because I am going to get a lot more productivity, I think, out of them and really expect a lot more. When I look at the list here, emergency communication, sheriff, probation, jail, right, I would just point out, you know, our census has gone from 458 to 200 and it's going to drop to 100. So at the jail. So I hope to be taking a hard look at some of those numbers with you guys. You know, this is an imperative, in my opinion, an imperative set of responsibilities. And that's the best I can say. I'm fighting for my team. I think they need it. I'm going to work them hard. And I do think it's imperative.
Bert, I hate to throw you into the mix here, but I'm hoping you can help. I'm trying to understand. We've looked at a list of where there are 40-hour work weeks in the county and where there are 35, where there's 37 and a half. Can you help us understand how it gets decided what department is at how many hours per week and what department?
I can say in terms of the ones that are 40 hours, they're more public safety because they're 24/7. So when you look at the jail, sheriff, probation, and 911, they're 24/7, so you have to cover three shifts. So that's why they're 40 hours. I think highway is 40 hours, predominantly the same reason.
Mm-hmm. The highway has multiple shifts?
Well, in terms of they can structure it so they do have shifts. And, you know, in terms of their salaries, they have a separate wage kind of negotiation, so it's all based on 40 hours per highway. I think the only other one on there is UCAT.
DSS.
They're 35.
DSS is 35.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's jail, probation,
yeah,
sheriff.
That's public safety.
I see it.
Because
yep.
Of the
emergency 911,
yeah.
UCAT, and highway.
And highway, again, they have their own wage scale based on 40 hours.
But also, based on the director or the person in charge of the office, they can go up to 37 and a half or 40 hours if they feel deemed to do such just by having the necessary money in their budget and propose it that way. So we as a legislative body have no control over that.
We have no control.
No
we
control.
Appropriate.
We appropriate, but there's money in their budget.
Okay.
They can take the liberty and put for 90 days
that's
going
okay.
from 35 to 40 hours or 35 and a half hours.
Oh, okay. So they can do it based on their run rate. So if they've had vacancies for the year or haven't spent, they can...
They don't even have to do it that way. They
okay.
deem necessary to have extra man hours in their department.
Yeah,
they can
they
do
have
so.
Have the money.
Rich,
they have to have the money.
Money
right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Guys,
Doug, please,
money,
if you...
Don't
if
do it, we have nothing to say about that.
Okay.
But it's not money just within the department. It's because normally budget or the exec's office has to approve it. It has to be, for me, it has to be in the payroll line. It can't be a savings from another expense.
Well,
okay.
We changed that, Bert, because of that reason,
hello?
Back a few
well,
years ago.
Yeah, but it's
Bert,
one of those
that
where
that
if there's
budget,
a vacancy or a leave without pay or something like that where the department has to cover it.
Has
those
payroll
also,
dollars.
Those
they have
alternative
extra
work
payroll
schedules
dollars.
Are.
Okay.
But, I mean, there again, that was taken advantage, and that's why we have this issue, especially in this particular department.
So let me ask you this. Does it present an issue because a portion of your crew is CSEA, correct?
Yeah.
And
those
can
four
we,
auditors are.
Can we, CSEA, is there any hour contract?
No.
So we can, it's the job that dictates the hours?
May I ask something?
Please.
Bert, do you have any institutional knowledge about, you know, the years, because it's multiple years, that the staff, the auditor staff, was at 40 hours?
I provided, actually, I think the details at Amber, kind of when they went to alternative work schedules. It was budgeted for,
we
I,
have
you
that.
Know, 4 years at 70, and then the alternative work schedule came after the budget was adopted. I shared that with
you.
It was. Yeah.
That's not it. That's not it.
Oh, it's not?
That's Board of
okay,
Election.
We don't have a copy of it then.
Yeah, that's Board of Election.
I think I did send it, though.
I thought I saw something.
It's electronic, and I can't do it because we're getting ready for session out in the hallway. I don't have a printer.
Okay.
It's fine.
But there was a
there was a period
yeah.
of time when it was budgeted at
yeah.
80, and...
Yeah. Moved it back to 70.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
exactly. So, I mean, I think...
So, can I just step back from this just for a second because... It seems to me that it's a benefit to employees to have a 35-hour work week, but it's a benefit to us to have people go to a 40-hour work week rather than have to add an additional staff person. So I think as the work increases in the department, this is kind of a natural way to grow the department if the employees are willing. So I think that the explanation of why we have 40-hour weeks for safety and all that, absolutely, I agree with that. But I can also think that it might be valuable to have this kind of conversation with the director of a department as they're seeing a workload. The only question I have is because we have a new person coming in, is that workload going to stay at that level, or is there still some catching up that's being done? And if so, could we consider at some point going back down to 35, both for our budget and for the employees to have a 35-hour work week, those that might prefer to have that? So I see it as a little more fluid than the categories that were being proposed, and just say we should stay in conversation about it.
I think your point is well taken. I think this could avoid adding an additional team member. And, you know, I'm not there yet, okay? So I can tell you the 2019 plan did not get done. So I'm going to expect a lot more in 2020. Whether that requires, you know, multiple years at that higher level, I don't know. Maybe it won't. Maybe we'll be able to get through a big chunk of what should have been done and what will be done next year. Yeah.
Any other questions?
We're not going to be able to do everything that happened in 2019. There's no possible way. Yep.
But we'll down staff, and there was a lot of change.
But we'll be pulling some things forward that should have been done.
There's no question. And the other point, while you're here, I know in the past there was a discussion about what this legislative body would like to have looked at and have an audit done. I hope you're agreeable to, you know, entertain those areas and maybe consider them and maybe move.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you for your consideration. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Laura, do you want to wait or do you?
Oh, you know what? Oh, yeah. Can I say one last thing?
Please.
There is another amendment, and unfortunately I have a conflict, so I will not be here to speak to Ken Ronk's amendment, which addresses the salary for the Director of Audit and Internal Control. Evan will speak to that. We really prefer the larger amount, but we support Ken's amendment if we cannot get the larger amount. And Evan will speak to that later.
Thank you.
Well, it's Ken's amendment. It's not till tomorrow, so yeah. Or no, it's actually here later today, but I don't know if Ken's going to be.
He won't be back until 6 o'clock.
All right, so we may get to.
If it comes up and I'm not available, Evan's ready to speak on it.
Okay. We'll let you know.
Thank you.
Can Evan just say his piece and then
I do think that to be able to have back and forth is helpful. So. We'll let you know when tomorrow Ken will be here and what time, and so we'll work around that. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Mark, you came back? Couldn't resist, huh? You like it so much here.
There was a break, and then I just got caught up in other work.
We're glad to have you back.
You sent the numbers on the waiting list for the person.
I did. I sent you the numbers on the waiting list.
207.
134 in the home. And then 90 something in personal care assistance, which is
207.
So home aides are the ones doing the cleaning, the dishwashing, and then home aides are the personal care.
Personal care is when there's a bigger step where maybe they're dressing or bathing.
Right.
Or,
right. Okay.
Yeah, during the break, he went home and talking about that. He went home and back in the
room. I did.
Hey, he went to my house, Dave.
You made good time.
Okay, so I will go ahead. Do you want to wait?
And I'm pulling the fire rescue vehicle. Not all of the fire companies have them. However, we do have some in several sheriff departments. So I think right now we're comfortable with that.
So you're pulling that one?
Like totally off the list. You're not moving it till tomorrow.
No, I'm going to pull that off.
Okay.
I'm going to do more research on it. It was specifically for emergency response for harder to get to. These are our ATVs. So if someone fell off their bike on the trail and broke an arm, it was basically immobile. This came as a request from one fire company, and then someone from another one said, well, I think these people have one of these. So they are out there.
Okay.
In the future, maybe we could have more. So we could, but
okay, did you hear that? That's called. Okay, and your other one regarding fire training, you want to speak to that one?
He's not here yet.
Okay, so you want to hold on?
Sure.
So I will speak to the two that I put in. And the overall is really about transparency. The county executive is really looking to a kind of realign government in a different way. And he talks about transparency, and when we talk about innovation, we talk about having an internal consulting group to help drive KPMs in different parts of our business, so it's not just how many widgets are being performed, but is the quality of service there? Are we moving people up and out of programs if necessary? Are we meeting the needs of people in programs? And remember, in a lot of cases, the county government is addressing a lot of folks without a voice. And so I think it's really important, if we are trying to drive change and try to drive a different way of thinking, that we build capacity. Bless you.
Thank you, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Build capacity in our internal consulting group, which is basically what was defined as ACE, but is really the Office of Innovation. So I think it's really important to ensure we're building capacity with regards to bringing on a team that can work across the organization, use analytics and data to drive decisions, and to help structure a new way of thinking. And I think Tim and is going to be building that team to do that. To go outside and hire an external consultant is going to cost a heck of a lot more, and they're going to have a learning curve in coming up and understanding the organization. So the best way to really kind of measure our new innovation team then is to fully load their budget, so we see what it costs us and we can start to look at how they're performing. I think this really aligns with the exec's overall direction in creating transparency, etc. So that's why we made the recommendation to, even though innovation is sitting in finance, to fully load that cost center or division is what you call it, to ensure we have a good feel for what it's costing us to bring that expertise into the organization. Tim's here, so if anyone has any questions around innovation, here's the opportunity to ask questions. Hopefully I did justice to what you're trying to accomplish.
Very well done.
Yeah, Laura?
I think part of the description was basically an overview of all of our programs and departments to see what more could be done. But we're also going to have, you know, a new comptroller who's going to be looking at that as well as far as audits. How are you going to be, I mean, how are these two departments going to be working together in addition to, I'm hoping, economic development, because you were really awesome on the call with the department, because I don't know what else to say. But so how is all this going to get tied in so we can lower costs, increase, you know, internal programs and tourism, and how are we going to?
So audit and advisory, as my kind of past history would teach me, I was a consultant at Deloitte Consulting during the Sarbanes-Oxley stuff, where audit and advisory are complementary but not the same function. And so the work of the innovation team will be to work collectively and collaboratively with our departments to identify the value that they can bring. You know, the program outcomes, as Lynn was pointing out, is an important measure that I think we're in the habit of measuring how much work we do, not what that work accomplishes. And so the effort will be to help our departments define objectives and to define measures of those objectives so that we can have a discussion about the impact that our county services and programs are having. And that obviously goes hand in hand with a program audit, say, from the comptroller's office that might find some deficiency. But then the innovation team is the team that would help implement a corrective action and make sure that that department is performing up to its expected standard.
Any other questions? Oh, good. The other item is previously, and we had this conversation in Ways and Means, I think when you guys first came to present your budget, there were a number of resources that were sitting in other departments and, you know, had been the practice for years. And in the spirit of transparency and really looking at it, all we did here was realign resources that are supporting the overall effort for the county in communication and the way in which we're delivering information to our constituents and people using the various programs. And so we're aligning the resources. So some may say, oh, you're doubling the office of the county executive. No, we're now reflecting the people working on behalf of the entire county to get communication and information out to the people of Ulster County. So this is just an alignment. This is not intended to be anything other than, you know, just showing transparently who's working on programs across the county. Yes?
So that seems like a laudable goal, but it also is kind of, it seems to me, reaching into the executive's office and doing things to it in a way that doesn't seem to me to be as collegial as we could do. So I would think that maybe the best way for us to go forward would be to work to do that over time and as the office can accommodate those changes. We've had an executive for 10 years who did things a certain way, and we have a new executive, and we may want to form new relationships and have them do it a different way. I think that's can be very healthy. But to impose that on somebody who's coming in, who's new, who's still trying to learn the existing system and work that, I think is maybe not wise. It's not wrong per se, but it seems a little disrespectful and a little kind of abrupt for us to change everything to a certain way of putting it on the piece of paper and making it go. So it seems to me like if the exec's office is open to that, which I understand might be the case, to just do that over time rather than at one full shot might be a kinder, gentler way of forming a working relationship and getting what we think would be a better design at the end.
Dave?
I'm a little confused here. Now, you're not doing anything to the orders showing in the budget we're just changing in the budget where it shows up. We're not changing his office. I'm doing any of that. We're just making it more clear that who is doing what. So I don't see it as being aggressive against the county executive in any way or form. Same thing with what we did yesterday dealing with the elected officials. They present their budget. They present their budget to the county executive. At that same time, they can present it to us. So it's quick. I'm done. Email done. It's not changing anything. I don't see it changing anything substantially.
Mark?
I don't want to speak on the detail of every little change that was made, but I will say that I was just over speaking with the team in the county executive's office, and I think the belief is a little bit more aligned with what Kathy is. We were a little bit confused with amendment. I know the county executive told me he spoke with you earlier. He put forth the composition of his office that he believes was necessary to deliver results for the people of Ulster County. He shared that budget in a public presentation and at 20-plus town halls leading up to this last election, where he was overwhelmingly reelected by a wide margin. I think that if there's one thing we can all agree on, is the principle that separate branches of government should be able to set up their own office within reason. And we believe that this sets a little bit of a different precedent, and we have just some concerns.
Mm-hmm. Chair.
So I feel like we're speaking kind of in these broad terms. I mean, are there specifics in these moves where these people aren't specifically working under the exec? That seems like, I think if you have specific complaints versus...
I don't want to go step by step on this particular amendment. I mean, this is a pretty broad, overarching amendment making significant changes, I think adding 40%. To the county executive's budget, and I'll just go back to say that.
But But again, if the previous county executive was holding personnel outside of the executive staff budget, but people that were doing executive staff work, this is a corrective action on the previous executive. Look, I appreciate the argument that it makes it look like it's a 40% increase that this executive is making, but it's not. It's a realignment reflecting actual expense. I mean, I think that's the intention. Where I would have concern is if on the specifics, if there was a change in here and you were able to say, and you don't have to do it right this minute, you were able to say, this person actually isn't working for the exec. This person's working, working for the Commissioner of Finance, doing financial work as defined by finance, working full-time under Burt, reporting to Burt, then that's a mistake. But I think that this is meant to be a corrective action based on what the previous executive did. I don't want to speak for legislator Archer here a minute, but that based on the previous executive's structure of budgeting personnel in places other than where they were actually.
And we had a conversation about this in Ways and Means when we first started talking about this. So, I in no way did I intend it to be anything other than we're really trying to create different levels of transparency in the organization. I embrace that, and I applaud the county exec for wanting to do that. And, so if there was a misstep in this in not having further conversation, I see it. No way are we changing anybody's job. This is just aligning the resources where we were told they were supporting the government. So,
but the example that Chair Bartels gave, I think, shows how it can be difficult to know that it's just, it looks like, from our perspective, that you're just moving numbers on a page, and I get that, and that would be clearer. But she said, but if you look at it and you find out that this person is really working with finance and doing this, those are digging down into individual, there's a whole collection of staffing positions that would be affected here. And if half of them actually should be in the other place, and we don't know which half that is, and we have somebody who's just been elected for his first full term in office, I would just think that we would just go at that a little more, in a more measured way, and say, this is a shared goal. Can you, over time, sort out which ones are really should be here and should be there? Because I think to say, well, they're all there, is maybe not to fully understand how it worked or should work. And I think the executive should be the one to set that. Those goals and help sort out the wheat from the chaff, as it were, although I don't want to make anybody chaff here. But just help sort out which ways of the structuring works best, and it's not just numbers on a page, because
it's not. It's people already aligned.
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
Should be who they're reporting to and working with and all that. That's part of what you were observing as the problem. But I'm just saying that and the problem I give and the solution I give, it just seemed like to do it all at once with somebody who's relatively new in the office doesn't give them a chance to find out whether there might have been some intelligence functioning there that we haven't yet seen. And it's hard to see that from outside. That's one of the reasons the legislature generally, I think, leaves the executive to make those internal decisions. We maybe think that it wasn't done in a way that was, that we are quite happy with. But my understanding is we have an executive who wants to make a change. So I would try to let that happen at his pace rather than ours.
Mark,
as long as it's happening.
And again, we can have a further conversation about specific titles or whatever, but I do know that at least one of these titles has changed, and I have no idea whether it was vetted through personnel. Every title that when we create it in the administration, is vetted through personnel to make sure that New York State Civil Service, if the title exists and it's competitive or it's non-exempt or whatever, that's all vetted And I'm not sure, I don't know whether that was done in this instance, and so that's another, if you look at the org chart, there's there's a
communications manager.
That's
one for me. Can I get some clarity? So we'll, well, clearly we need to get some more clarity on this, and we can talk about it. Yep, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you're not changing the names of any of these positions, are you? This
yes.
One time you do.
Hold on, one conversation, please.
Unless you are changing names, I don't see where you're changing names.
Yeah, well, we'll go back and research this and come back. So,
it's just showing that they are attached to the county executive. We've complained about that for the last number of years. Mm-hmm. About the idea that it's not clear that we know very well that much of this budget is actually directly, works directly with them for that, the executive department, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be reflective in this budget. And I understand the problem. I mean, you got a newly elected person, all of a sudden it's going to show that they've got a 40% increase. When they didn't get a 40% increase, it was just realigned it the way it should have been always realigned. Mm-hmm.
Legislative team.
I get the.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was done. Sorry. Yeah. Legislative petite.
I'm just thinking, coming into this from attending some other meetings, including the audit committee, where we were looking at a plan of succession and talking about organizational charts. Each entity and county should have an organizational chart, but maybe we are putting the cart before the horse. I mean,
these were given to them at the budget meeting for review.
But this seems some of these titles
was changed to us when?
At the budget meeting.
One. What title? Can you just clarify for them? What title is changing?
Well, you know what? Let us go back and just correct everything.
You're also in the middle of doing an audit as well. So
right.
I think taking that professional audit along with the job description changes from civil service and, other, we should put that all together all at once.
Okay. Jim?
This is a confidential secretary that we all know works directly for the executive.
That's not what we're talking about.
There's
talking about four positions.
Financial analyst that was changed to a title.
I'm not talking about the title.
Okay.
I'm talking about the four positions. A communications manager, a digital media coordinator. These are, it's pretty straightforward what's going on here. Yes, you're right, it does go back to the former executive. But if we're worried, what I hear is we're concerned that the new executive is going to be perceived as raising his budget when really it was existing, and we're kind of doing it to him in this budget cycle.
I didn't raise a perception issue. That wasn't words that I...
I'm going to take responsibility for this, please. So let's...
I don't
hold on just one second, please. This was based on conversations at the Ways and Means Budget Review. We confirmed that these positions I did not take that extra step and have the conversation, but this was just to put transparency here.
Absolutely.
And I hear what Legislator Nolan is saying, I hear what everybody's concerns are, and I hear what you're saying. All I was trying to do was just to create transparency where in the past it did not exist to this level. That's it.
I agree. I'll just say in closing, because we're going to be talking about this again, these are all four positions are 100% tax dollars funded, correct? County tax dollars?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get it right. It's 100% tax dollars.
All of our jobs are. So
where their tax dollars are going. And that means it should be charged to the proper budget line. I appreciate what you did here, and it should be done, and it shouldn't be a big argument. This is where they're working. This is who they're working for.
Okay.
Charge it to their budget.
Legislator Nolan.
So at the community programs the other day, I raised a question about whether or not some of the youth programs should be moved from being in community programs and come to help, and we made a couple of questions about that. The discussion that ensued was that there were reasons that those, what looked like anomalies, were in those different areas. In some cases, it did depend upon the funding. And so one person who was handling a certain type of funding should handle that program for youth health in that program because that they had experience and confidence and a whole system set up to handle that. But there were other reasons that you would have people not in the places that you thought they might be, or in that case, programs in the places that you thought they might be. And by going through each of them and looking at them carefully, you get them sorted out, and sometimes you say, oh, well, we have a media person there because that's sitting next to all the computers and they're using the computers all the time, or something like that. So that's what I'm suggesting as the reason here, not any kind of perception. I want us to do a careful, good job of making the chart match what's happening and not lose anything that we may have gotten by having something that looks a little off.
And we'll get it corrected. So legislator Martinez. Wait a minute. I'm recognizing, please. One at a time.
Well, I just have a question in terms of that, the one that you're saying that the titles change, which I think is just for the purpose of the org chart. Are you saying that that person is actually doing financial analyst work? Is that what's happening in that?
I don't want to go line by line and discuss each.
We will do
person.
This. We will do that,
will,
though. And
fine.
We will get this straightened out.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I asked you as chairman of the finance committee have a sit down with them.
We just said that's what we're going to do. That's
you guys work that out.
Great recommendation.
Great.
Thank you. Are we ready?
We're ready.
Okay.
Are you under the bus or
me?
Yeah. So
you want to tee it up, Maura?
Yes, I will tee it up.
Thank you.
We have 52 fire companies in Ulster County. Most of them are volunteers, and it's not just that. Even though I have a question about this with my 5-year-old grandson, I think he knows as much as I do, but. You know, you just don't hop into a shiny red engine and go do a real public service. There are hours and hours of training. There are hours of prepping these emergency response vehicles, making sure that they're going to work when they get there. So with that, I'm finding that, you know, these people that go out and work full-time jobs, some of them have two, that have families, they need to travel great distances at times to get this training. So, and I guess from there you can bring up to explain the family.
Okay.
It is for 15,000.
Oh, we're starting with training first?
Yes. My name is Frank Banks. I'm the chairman of the Fire Advisory Board. And just to lay a little groundwork, we're requesting a line for $15,000 for advanced training. And I know I hate to come in front of you and thank you everybody who supported the training center and getting that up and running. And, you know, I don't want to be that guy to keep running to the well, but there's a specific reason why we're looking to do what we do as far as what we're looking for the money. So the history is for the last 2 years we've gone to Nassau County. We go to Nassau County on the Volunteer Firemen's Association dollar, which is all clothing bins, fundraising money. That's how we get there. It's very generous of them to donate. The first year they gave $15,000. The Association of Districts, I think, gave like $4,000 or $3,000, and the Chiefs Association. So these are all volunteer organizations that make their money off of fundraising. So to backpedal years past here, we have New York State has a training academy in Montour Falls. That's where paid firefighters go to get trained. City of Kingston sends people. People from all over New York State go there and get trained there. They have some specific trainings there, but the reality is their training facility there isn't any better than the training facility we're building here. So what I'm looking to do with this money is the earmark it for advanced training, which is where Nassau County or there's others. It would not always be Nassau County. It's actually looked at by a whole group of people called United Concerns when we all sit down for a training goal. So we have a training facility here that's, you know, will be up and running hopefully sometime next year, and it's great. It's going to be a state-of-the-art facility, but it's nowhere near to the state-of-the-art facility that we're already sending 50 firemen to now for the last 2 years on other people's money. And when I say advanced training, these are FDNY chiefs teaching these classes. You can go there for marine operations. You can go there for rail operations. You can go there. There's a five-story high-rise, which we've done 2 years with multiple scenarios. There's strip malls. Every scenario you can imagine is in this facility. Now, there's other facilities like that, too, Oriskany, where you can go get swift water rescue training. These are all things that aren't going to, we'll never have the capabilities to offer these trainings to our people at our own facility. So, the first year we did this, the Volunteer Firemen's Association gave us $15,000. People gave some money. The second year here, it kind of got a little more complicated. The Volunteer Firemen's Association is running out of money. They're really not in a financial position to keep giving us that money every year. Now, we can go to Montour Falls, and the way Montour Falls worked in the past, and we can't get enough people. You have to have 80 people to go to Montour Falls. We're getting 50 to do our weekend now, a solid 50. We're filling a bus. To go to Montour Falls, you book a date. You have 80-plus people. You get on the calendar. You get in your car. You drive up there. Either the fire departments pay or the member pays. I've gone in the past. It costs $125 to go. Some people have LOSAP. Some people have whatever. My fire department, we don't have anything. We don't have a retirement system. I don't get anything for being a volunteer fireman. My kid goes to college, doesn't get anything for being a volunteer fireman. You know, so I don't think it's fair to ask to continue on for more advanced training. I don't think it's fair to ask volunteer organizations that are not-for-profits to give their hard-earned money, and I don't think it's fair to ask people who want advanced training to have to pay out of their pocket. So I know we're going to have our own training facility, but this is above and beyond that. It's very, very specific trainings. Like I said, you know, could next year it could be Oriskany, it could be swift water. That's great training to have for this area. We have areas where we've had, you know, I was here in Irene where we were plucking people out of places with an army truck. So we've never had a line item before. The Fire Advisory Board has never asked of anything before. My concern is that if we can't secure this funding to do something moving forward, advanced training out of county, that it's going to go to the wayside, and we're just going to be limited to the same old again.
Yes. Okay. So, for the 15,000, how many people's training? You mentioned that for some you pay 125, but how many people's training will this cover?
It'll guarantee 50 people every year for advanced training, which two consecutive years, that's where we've been at, between 48 and 50 people. So this 15,000 is the lion's share, which is the bus, the lodging, and then we still have other organizations. It's easier to go to people. They ask to give 2,000 or 3,000. Without this money, this trip would not exist. We would not get this training. It was offered originally, and it was a great opportunity, and I went down. And nobody knew how it was going to go. Everybody carried on about it like it was the best thing in the world. And I'll tell you the other example of where this works that I see. So my son and me and my daughter were in Esopus. So you work with New Paltz. You work with the people within your town. You don't get to work with Centerville, really, you know, a little bit with Ulster Hose. You don't get to work with Phoenicia, where those people are coming from. So the other thing is in a real-time, urgent situation, you're working with people that you don't normally work with, and you're also creating a camaraderie with those people because you're going there on a bus. You're spending the whole weekend together. You're in a life-and-death situation. You come out with many, many new friends, and I just think the whole thing from the training that's given to the camaraderie and what the firemen get out of the it would break my heart to see it go away. Yes, by qualified people. What happens is through Everett's office, they put out the training announcement that we're going to do a cat. It actually starts, the whole process is we have United Concerns. So that's me, it's Everett's office, it's the Volunteer Firemen's Association, the Chiefs Association, and the New York State Association of Districts. So Volunteer Firemen Association of Fire Districts and Chiefs are the people who consecutively have kicked in money for this. So what happens is in January, this is how we pick a location. You look at what options are out there that are above and beyond what we can do now. you know, and then at that point, people are assigned tasks. So we pick a location. So 2 years in a row now we've done Nassau. We pick the location. Then people from each organization is assigned tasks to come up with what this is going to cost, because the earmarked budget is roughly $20,000 that we look to work with. Then the next step is a training announcement goes out to people. And basically what we look to take is 1 to 2 people from every fire company or fire district in the county, give 2 spots availability. Now, if we can't fill those spots, you know, like we had one person, my son, from my department this year, if we can't fill it, then they go to a secondary list of people. But the idea is to include everybody countywide so that everybody gets a seat on the bus and gets the opportunity.
Legislator.
You're saying that what if you need to come from each of the fire organizations? Have you considered, you know, going to the municipalities that you actually service? I mean, for instance, you're in the SOPIS. Does the town of the SOPIS give you any money towards that?
No.
But yet you do you're protecting that town.
But we get taxpayer money to do that. You know, it's a taxpayer's dollar.
Right.
So what will happen is, you know, we have a budget there too. So it's just you're stealing from Peter to pay Paul is what happens. So and then the next step is it goes back to the department, which once again is a not-for-profit organization.
What I'm saying is
the
municipality
right.
that you are servicing should be helping you pay for these things. The way I'm kind of looking at it, I mean, whatever that tax dollar is to pay for my, you know, fire protection, and I'm planning to cut the check. My mindset is that I don't really have a real problem with this, but I really think that the municipalities that you are serviced should be the ones that are actually saying, hey, yes, we value what you do.
But how does that help me account for the money? And so I go to the town of Hurley and I say, I want you to give me $1,000. And then they don't have anybody to go. So then what do? We can't ask people to commit to something. And you don't know who's going to get on that bus until the day of the bus.
Legislator Maloney?
I just got a couple of questions. And I'm in theory, I'm very supportive. But I do think that Legislator Donaldson brings the first thing that popped into my head is, that you would, I think it makes more sense to have the municipality, they're giving each fire district money, though. So this is, you're asking for more, is what you're saying.
Yes, yeah. It's a district tax.
They're not giving it. They're not giving it to
them. Yeah, we get a budget. We submit a budget, and that's it. And that's all we're getting, and it's a tax dollar. The town is not going to give us anything.
On average, go on this trip.
50. We've had a strong 50.
And you average about one person from every...
Pretty close, yeah.
How many districts are there?
And 15,000 covers that trip for the 50?
The 15,000 covers the lodging. It covers the payment for the training facility. It pays for the bus. The only thing that it hasn't paid for in the past is the food. And that's where the Association of Districts comes in. And the Chiefs Association, they chip in money. And then what we do is we go down there. And in this instance, we look for a fire department that will sponsor us. So 2 years in a row, we had North Massapequa, who actually, we had catered food. I think it costs $1,500. We show up at North Massapequa. They invite us into their house. They serve us. The caterer drops the food off, and that's it.
And do you worry that with the money there now, you'll have twice as many people going and a higher expense?
No, because we know what the cost is and how many people we can afford to take. And we haven't. Our goal this year, we wanted to get 100 people this year and do 2 buses. We didn't get anywhere close to that. You know, and like I said, the county weekend, to get a county weekend at Montour Falls, is you need between 80 and 100 people. And that's why we lost our county weekend here. So it's not even an option here. So then the next step was we went to other counties around us. They went to Sullivan County and tried to work out a deal with Sullivan County. But then Sullivan County said, yeah, if we don't fill our weekend, then that's fine. You're more than welcome to do it. And guess what? They filled their weekend, and then they said, sorry, our people are going. So what happens is you go years without any other training. We kind of fell into a hole on many levels between the training facilities we had available and just the advanced training that people were going for.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, so I think this is quite clearly something that a countywide support would give you stability and give you the ability to draw from and get as many people going as possible. I'd like to see you be able to get to the 80 and go to some of those other specialized training. And we're sitting here in a 6-story building, so I encourage several of you to go to that 5-story high-rise training. These kinds of trainings for you are something I think that the citizens should give back to you for what you're giving to us. It enhances your skills. It makes it more enjoyable and safer for you. And then that all comes back to us when we have an emergency where some of this advanced level training that might not have even been billed as addressing that problem comes into play because you've gotten a whole set of broader skills. So I'm fully in support of it. You know, I think that the fact that you had some volunteer monies come in the past, it's worth trying to get that going in some ways.
No, we do. We've talked about corporate sponsorship. You know, we tried this year to try to get Trailways to donate the bus, and that was a no-go. You know, and I just want to give you a specific example of where things go. Okay, so here we started the city of Kingston is the county's hazmat team, and then they started a rescue to do trench rescue and rope rescue and stuff. Okay, I signed up to be on that team. I can teach confined space. I've been involved in confined space. I've worked for private companies for hire that did confined space rescue, all that stuff. I, as a municipal employee, am a perfect candidate to be on that team because my job will let me go. But what my job won't let me go, and once again, this comes back to training requirements as well. And they were looking to build that team off of paid firemen because they're already here and they can respond. And then they were looking to have volunteers. But then the next thing that happens is, how do you make me available to go to training? You can't ask the town of Esopus to turn me loose. It's one thing to go to calls, but you're going to tell me that for the next 6 months, I have to leave work every Thursday and Friday, or you have to give me off every Thursday and Friday so I can go train. So once again, you know, there was an effort here. I know you mentioned the city of Kingston. They provide a lot of services, and there was an attempt to merge to get volunteers involved on that level, which makes sense. Why wouldn't, if you were going to have that team, why wouldn't you want to have 50 people that could do it, not 10? Or whatever, you know, they have on a shift over here. So it's really, really important that we do advanced training. And my biggest concern is a lot of people think that what we're asking for, they think that it can be done with what we have or what we're going to have. And it's just not possible. There's no way. We're not going to build swift water rescue. We're not. And that's something we should be trained in. It really should. We've got Kingston Point. We've got loading terminals for fuel oil trucks all over the place. They have a loading rack down there where you can do terminal fires.
All right, thank you. Oh, yes.
Greg, I want to thank you for your help throughout the town of Esopus and throughout the county. I understand exactly, you know, what you do, what the fire companies do throughout the county. Great job. Should be commended very highly. I know personally that I have a couple businesses that I give some monies to the people that the districts that oversee me each year. I think this year, you know, since the county is doing the fire training center, I know it took a long time, but I mean, we're probably up in, you know, the $6 million area. I don't know if it's an appropriate time to be coming for us for, you know, I know it's only $15,000, but something that, like Dave mentioned, that might be something more going through the municipality of the towns or put it into your fire district budget in order to compensate the district from the fire district budgets, which we attack locally from those towns. So, it's very notable that, you know, what you're doing, how you're doing it. And I know that you're very ambitious about getting more training, and it's only going to help everybody. But there again, at this time, with us spending that kind of money on a fire training center, it might not be appropriate this year.
I mean, my answer to that, though, is I'm standing in front of you because the fire coordinator feels this is a valiant effort, and it goes beyond what he can provide. It's a bigger fish than that, and I just don't see on a local level how we're going to go get that money. So now we're supposed to go out and can shake or go to every town to try to get them to give for $15,000. To me, it's small potatoes. It really is.
Please, out of order, Dave. We had a question here, so sorry.
Yeah, but one thing about this municipality's paying that I forgot to say is that a lot of the fire districts cross cover for each other, and some of them do quite a bit more than others, just because of the nature of their squads, I guess I would call them. So to try to apportion, as was said, what would be the portion that should go to this community and that should come from this community. There's a lot of cross coverage. I forget what's that called.
Mutual aid.
Right? So mutual aid can go across a couple of different communities, which happens in my district a lot because we have the four towns and more than four fire districts. So I think we need to think of this as a funding source that merges, you know, that spreads that burden and benefit out. And it would be very hard for them to do it, you know, and figure out what Phoenicia Fire Department should do versus Pine Hill versus Big Indian. And the fact that they were building the fire center is to try to bring home some of this training. But that's a different level of training. This advanced training was happening before. It was just being covered by different sources.
Dave, and
in
then...
fire districts, you have a tax liability with your fire. Is that correct?
Yes.
When you do your fire district, they put out a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that live in that district.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what Lynn Sayer...
And we put in that budget a training line item for our members, for our fire department, for training to a certain extent. We all work within the same tax cap here, though.
Exactly.
So we've got a firehouse that's 20 years old that we can't pay the park lot because we don't have the money.
But
you know.
So your fire district's not paying for it. What I'm pointing at, though, is what Lynn Sayer some people could, is because if your fire district that you are serving, they are the people that you are doing this service for, and typically we try to make sure that, you know, whatever, whoever's getting the service should be paying for the service. Wouldn't you agree?
No. That's so far out of whack. I did 72 hours in Inwood, Long Island during Superstorm Sandy. You know, I mean, there's no level. You're talking about providing training to people. We're talking about lives. And we're talking about having people top trained in specialty areas.
That is a different issue.
Yeah.
What I'm pointing out is you should be doing this training every year. And you should have that opportunity. Why can't you put a line in when you put the budget in to say advanced training, and that is whatever that your area would typically use, and then if you don't use it, you could always put it back into the budget for the following year. My mindset is basically you should pay, in other words, the people that get the service as much as possible should pay for the service. I don't have a problem with putting this in our budget. It's not a lot of money, but the point is, there's a lot of people that want that, but on various monies. And I agree that if you should have that answer, I'm just pointing out, like Legislator Geraldine pointed out, in other words, they should be the people in your fire district, yours and each one of them,
mm-hmm.
should pay for that. That's the way I kind of look at it. They should be, and they're getting the benefit.
Okay, thank you.
See, I'd have to disagree with that once again. How is my fire district getting the benefit of fighting on a fifth floor of a building? I mean, we have high buildings, but we're not. But you know who's benefiting? When we come to the city of Kingston, when we go out to a hotel in Ellenville that's on fire, and you say, well, we're not going to go there. We've been there. I've been to Ellenville when everything was burning up on 52. We were there. We were there for 3 days. I was there 3 days straight.
Thank you.
Yeah, but just to just such a good point, is that the people who may be willing to pay for this, say, in Kingston, that the benefit of it may be given somewhere else.
Yes.
And the people in Ellenville might be willing in their fire district to pay for it, but then Ellenville is coming up and taking care of Kingston, who didn't chip in. That's exactly the setting in which you need to have the whole taking care of the whole, rather than say each little piece takes care of its own, because that doesn't happen when the fire happens.
No, when there's a fire, everybody works together.
And the system fell apart because back in the day, the fire departments or the member had to pay $125 to go to Montour Falls. And people don't think that it's fair that they should have to pay for that. We get zero benefits to be a volunteer fireman. If you're lucky enough to be in a wealthy district and you get a retirement system, that's great. We don't get that. St. Remy doesn't get that. There's only a handful of people that do. There's more that don't than do. We really don't get anything. And they ask for a little bit of money for advanced training that's going to help everybody as a whole. And it has nothing to do with just this county. As in general, like I said, I've done mutual aid and spend more tours doing stuff in my lifetime as a fireman. It's your training. That's what's going to save your life.
Legislator Charity. And we'll wrap this
up. No one's disputing the point that you shouldn't be going in your pocket to pay for your training, okay? Because it's given that everybody probably concurs with. How many districts are in Ulster County, fire districts?
52? Yeah, I think it's 52.
All right, so you're talking about 50 districts divided by $15,000. I mean, that's probably, divide that down, you're talking about $400-$500, if that much, not even that much.
Mm-hmm.
Probably $300.
$300.
I mean, like what Dave was saying, if you just incorporate that into your budget, your district, I mean, it's very minimal. It's probably pennies on the assessed value that they will be charged with. And there again, you have that money. It's not costing you or any fireman any kind of money there, and you have it paid for.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Wrap this up. I do have a question through the chair to our financial analyst.
Thank you so much for your
service. There was a concern that I had brought up, and I did speak to Ken Rock and Mike and Dean are supporting this, about where the money should be allocated. So, Amber had a recommendation.
Yeah, we amended the amendment to have it from other home and community development, because then it would be under the legislature's purview to pay it out.
Okay, so he is going to make an amendment later on.
It's already in there.
Okay.
It's in there.
All right, anything else? Thank you, everyone. Before we depart, there's been a suggestion that we have a 3 o'clock start tomorrow.
Well,
you're not here tomorrow. You're not here at all.
No. I mean, it's better for me to start earlier, like to pick the one. I don't know. Is anybody not available at the 1 o'clock?
I'm better at 3.
I'm better at one. I have a meeting at 4:30.
Yeah,
Two?
Start at 2.
We'll start at 2. We'll split the difference. Thank you, everyone.
Then when will you be voting on this?
How much we have time?
Monday.
Monday. Yeah. So tomorrow is just more.
Another more amendments. Yes.
Thank you.
Pardon me. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
How many amendments do you have?